He was the first of the 12. Slowly he walked along, his pace governed by the other 11. The load on his shoulder was a burden, but not nearly as heavy as his thoughts. His feet moved as if they were in autopilot, and his eyes remained fixed on the river in the distance. The dark brown waters swirled angrily as they raced toward the waiting sea. The harvest floods had caused the river to overflow its banks, and the water had this cold and dangerous look about it. And still he walked, his eyes never leaving the raging torrents ahead. He would never question his commander verbally, but his mind was filled with whys and hows. He wished that he could just stop and think it over, but it was apparent that that was no longer an option. And besides, if he did stop, what would the other 11 think? What would his family think? After all, everybody knew what an honor it had been to be chosen as one of the 12. Actually, it seemed like a pretty dubious honor to him. And still he walked. Maybe it was a joke. After all, the boss couldn't seriously expect him to just walk into the water. He didn't even know how to swim. That was it. At any time, his commander would holler, "Hey guys, come back. It was just a test." But the only sound to break the silence, the air, was the tramp of the 24 feet closing in on the river. All he could think about was, nobody even told us where the rocks are. And still he walked. And then they were at the edge of the raging river, the dark cold water just inches from their feet. The time was gone to hesitate, even if he wanted to. The choice was no longer his, because as the 11 others plunged ahead, his foot began its descent into the raging river Jordan, and his mind went back to the events that led them here. We are in week number 4 of our summer series, 316. And today I want to take us back. I want to go old school, back to the Old Testament, to Joshua chapter 3, verse 16. It's a story that is told as the people of Israel prepare to claim the promise that was given to them by God some 40 years before. They're preparing to enter into the promised land. Now, I would suspect that most of us, we know the broad strokes of the story, even if it's only from Hollywood. See, most recently there was this movie called Exodus, Gods and Kings. Disney gave us The Prince of Egypt back in 1995. Ben Kingsley starred in a movie made for television called Moses. And many of you, the most famous one of all is The Ten Commandments. And while none of them get it 100% correct, they do lay a good foundation for the story of the Exodus. 400 years after Joseph and his extended family settle in Egypt at the invitation of the Pharaoh, this tide of popular opinion has turned against them and they find themselves slaves. God calls a man named Moses who confronts the Pharaoh and he says, "Let my people go." You've seen the movie or you've read the story in the Bible, so you know that about the plagues, the release, the Red Sea, this pillar of fire by night and a column of smoke during the day. There's Mount Sinai, there's a golden calf, there's the Ten Commandments, and there is manna and quail to eat. There's water that comes from a rock and an awful lot of grumbling that takes place all the time. And after they arrive at the promised land, the naysayers, they have their way, and the people, they spend another 40 years wandering in the desert before they finally prepare to enter into the land that was promised them. And now a new leader, a man named Joshua, is about to lead them across the Jordan River and into the Promised Land. And the only barrier that stands in their way was the River Jordan. And we read in Joshua chapter 3, verse 16, the water above that point began backing up a great distance away at a town called Adam, which is near Zarethane. And the water below that point flowed to the Dead Sea until the riverbed was dry. Then all the people crossed over near the town of Jericho. But like all 3:16s, Joshua 3:16, it does not and cannot stand on its own. It's only a part of the story. And in this case, the story had actually begun some 40 years earlier. But we only need to go back to the previous day, where we read in Joshua chapter 3 at verse 5, where Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. Now this must have been one of the highlights in Joshua's career, when he and Caleb had brought back the report of Cana. Some 40 years before, he had felt this surge of victory. He had felt the excitement course through his veins, only to have it shattered by the disbelief of the people. 40 years previous, the people of Israel had stood ready to enter into the Promised Land. And when Joshua and Caleb come back and they cast this vision of what God had for them on the other side of the Jordan, the people, they braced their feet and they refused to go. Now that might have been a little bit of an understatement, because you can actually read the response of the people in Numbers chapter 14. But the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Now this time, it's Joshua and not Moses who sent out the spies. And when they brought back a favorable report, he gathers all of his people around him in this gigantic pep rally. And he tells them to purify themselves, which simply means that they are to surrender their wills to God. And with that commandment, there's a promise. Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. Now, maybe in hindsight, Joshua, he might have been better to phrase it, God will do great wonders, or God will do amazing things through you. And now, some four long decades after their initial refusal, God has finally given Joshua and the Israelites the green light. And this time, as the vision is cast, we read in Joshua chapter 1 at verse 16, it says, then they answered Joshua, whatever you have commanded us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. This was a defining moment in the life of Israel. God is promising the Israelites that if they consecrate themselves, he will do amazing things among them. And we need to only read through the Old Testament to realize that God has kept his promise. Because there is no other people in all the world who have seen the hand of God in their history like the Jews. Now, probably if you had talked to the average Israelite at this point in time, they would have said it's time to take a rest. Time to kick back and enjoy life for a while. After all, they had just spent 40 years wandering through the wilderness. 40 years of eating quail and manna. And they were so tired of manna. It was manna this and manna that, manna loaf, manna burgers, roasted, boiled, poached manna. And then for dessert, there was manna cream pie. You see, and nobody wanted them for neighbors. You see, they were those people. And so 40 years, it was desert skirmishes. And now the Jordan River, it stands between them and the Promised Land. And it wouldn't be the only barrier that they would face. In the next 3,000 years, the Israelites would have their work cut out for them, claiming a homeland, keeping a homeland, and finally reclaiming a homeland. And each step of the way, it was a step of faith. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, the faith chapter, it says, now faith is confidence in what we hope for, and assurance about what we do not see. And it was that type of faith right there that led the children of Israel into the promised land. A land that was seen only in its possibilities by Joshua and Caleb. And it was the vision of these two men that kept the promise alive year after year after year. And it was faith that allowed the children of Israel to claim Canaan. As long as their faith was alive, they were blessed. And when their faith became little, so did their blessings. After all, it's spelled out fairly plainly in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, where it says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists, and he rewards those who earnestly seek him. Now, the writer of Hebrews here, he did not say, without faith, it is hard to please God. What he said is, without faith, it is impossible to please God. See, the Israelites, their very ticket into the promised land was a ticket of faith. In Joshua chapter 3, we read the account of the instructions that God gave to Joshua. How the 12 priests had to carry the Ark of the Covenant on their shoulders down to the River Jordan, which is overflowing its banks. And in verse 13, we read, and as soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up at a heap. Now, I can just imagine the night before the conversation that Joshua is having with his commanders. And they say, hey, Joshua, have you got a plan for tomorrow? And he goes, I sure do. Listen to this. 12 men are going to take the ark, and they're going to go to carry it down to the river. And when they get there and they go step into the River Jordan's going to dry up. And they go, Joshua, have you got another plan? Have you got a backup plan, a plan B? You see, God, he could have led the Israelites to a shallow spot in the river. He could have instructed the Israelites to build a raft or to build a bridge. The truth is, God could have divided the Jordan River before the Israelites actually even got there. And then nobody would have had to get their feet wet. But the fact of the matter was that this incident, it had happened for two reasons. The first was to test their faith. They had to answer the question, do we really believe that this is the direction that God wants us to go? And do we really believe that he can provide the way? Now, it was Martin Luther King who said, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. In this case, faith was taking the first step even while the river was still raging right in front of them. The second reason, it's even more important. When the 12 tribes of Israel followed the priest and the Ark of the Covenant to the edge of the River Jordan, and when they stood there with their hearts in their throats waiting for the priest to step into the muddy, swirling waters, they were proving their willingness to obey God no matter what. Had the Israelites stopped at that point? If they had devised some other plan, some other scheme in order to cross the river, I am convinced that today Israel would just be another ancient dead civilization. Once again, we see that God never entrusts us with a lot until he first tests us with a little. And in this case, it worked. See, if you go back to this week's 3:16, it says the waters from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up a heap at a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethane, while the waters flowing down to the Sea of Rahab, which is the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. Sometimes we are led to believe that all we need is a vision and faith, and that everything will be all right. But in the case of the people of Israel, there was a raging river that stood between them and what God had for them. And then there was the city of Jericho. And then, see, and it really all came down to the faith of one guy, the guy who was in the lead. If he had stopped, everybody would have had to stop as well. The destiny of a nation, it rested in the hands of one man. So the question is, what did he know? Why was he so willing to step into a raging river? Maybe you're sitting there and you're wondering this morning, so what does crossing a river some 3,000 years ago have to do with me today? Well, the reality is that if we are following God, there will be times as individuals and times as a church where we will find rivers of doubt and controversy and conflict that will need to be crossed. See, I think that first of all, Joshua knew the provisions of the past. For 40 years, the people of Israel had wandered in the wilderness, never settling, never establishing a country, always at odds with their environment and with their neighbors. And yet during that 40 years, they saw God's hand at work over and over and over again. God provided them food in a desert where they had no land to farm, and even if they did have land, the wilderness was so inhospitable that no crop would grow, and yet for 40 years they ate. They wandered in a land with no rivers and no lakes, and yet for 40 years they did not go without water. And the man who was in the lead, he had seen it all. He had tasted the manna. He had feasted on quail. He had drank water that miraculously sprang from a rock, which I guess would make it a spring. He had seen God's hand as the Israelites were defending their families against hostile forces. As a child, he had witnessed the entire country's escape from Egypt. He had walked on the floor of the Red Sea. He had followed this pillar of fire by night and a column of smoke during the day. And so Joshua, he believed that if God had been faithful back then, he would be faithful right now. See, as a church, when we face obstacles, we have to only look to the past and how God has provided over and over again. Richmond Community Church started some 70 years ago. May 30th, 1937 was the first time that the church met in the second story of a building where they paid rent for $10. They rented a building. 2 years later, that building was sold. They had to go to another place, and they eventually were able to buy two pieces of property here. That was the start of it. Some 25 years ago or so, there was a group of 10 people that were meeting here at the church. And they called and they said they wanted to talk to the association director. And the director thought that they were going to say, we want to close the doors. But the people, they had a vision. And they said, we still believe God wants to do something here. And so they kept the church going. See, you have to believe that if God was faithful back then, he'll still be faithful today, right now. But you see, Joshua, he didn't just know about the past. He knew the promise of the future. For 40 years, he dreamed of the day that he would have land of his own. For 40 years, he dreamed of this land that flowed with milk and honey. He knew that their destiny wasn't the wilderness, but it was the promised land. There were those who have settled for life in the desert, but he knew that God's promises were much greater than the wilderness. There were those who would claim that this vision of Joshua, it was just a man's vision, but he knew that he was simply the messenger, and that it was God's vision. He knew that he had seen the promised land. He had tasted of the fruit of the promised land. And nobody had sacrificed more for this vision than Joshua had. You see, there are times in our lives that we can get distracted from the vision. You see, what is it that God has? What is it that God wants to do in your life? It was just Marshall. He was on his way out. What does he have for your career? For your children, for your education? What is God's vision for your spiritual life and your spiritual walk? Are you being true to that vision? You see, sometimes it's easy to settle for less than what God wants for us. To settle into complacency in the wilderness and to miss out on the promised land. But you see, that's to settle for less than God's very best. And God's very best, it might be just across the river. As a church, the temptation is there to stray from the vision that we were founded on. Sometimes for very good reasons, somebody comes up with an idea and it's a great idea. It doesn't necessarily match with the vision of the church, but it's a great idea. And they're persuasive and we say, okay, let's try it. And we make a little course correction here and then a little course correction there. Pretty soon we're not even headed where we began and where God has been calling us. But you see, ultimately what we have to ask ourselves is, what does God want us to do? How does it fit in with the vision that he's given to the church? You see, those who were carrying the ark, they believed in Joshua. They believed in the vision, and they were not going to let that river stand in their way. See, Richmond Community Church, and I've gone through the history. There's a book, and I'll get to it in a little bit, a little pamphlet thing that talks about the history of the church. And this church was founded from people in other churches, and they felt that God was calling them to have a community church here. And it's always been that way. A church in the middle of this community, Richmond Community. And sometimes that means that we're not like other churches. We don't act like other churches. We don't look like other churches. Sometimes it means that we will have to cross rivers to get to where God is leading us. You see, ultimately, Joshua, he knew that his faith would be honored. See, all that faith requires is that you believe. And sometimes, on your way there, you can't demonstrate faith without belief. And you can't demonstrate belief without action. See, it wasn't simply enough for the first man in this group to proclaim, I believe that God can stop the river so that we can cross. Unless he was willing to take the first step and actually step into the river. You see, anytime God calls you to do something, he first calls you to believe. And then he calls you to step out in faith. As we wrap it up this morning here, what is it that God is whispering in your ear today? What vision does he have for your tomorrow? Where is he leading you? What river is he calling you to cross? See, only you can answer that question. And only you can take the first step and get your feet wet.